You're not talking about Israel-Palestine, always, what does it mean? And many times people question. But I remember at the time of the honey days of Oslo, an Israeli and Palestinian were traveling together. And the Palestinian wanted to go to the bathroom on the airplane. And then he saw occupied, and he said, there is an Israeli inside. So Shlomo and Adil continued the trip, you know, and when, you know, they went to the, what they call it, visa or whatever, you know, passport control, name, Shlomo, occupation, no, I am for tourism, not occupation. So what do we expect to talk about Israel-Palestine? What do you talk about the situation there? You know, there are the worst of times, and I look always at the best of times. The worst of times, I believe you have been familiar with it, and you have been visiting. Many of you have been in the area a lot and well informed about it. But it seems the situation got worse too. The unilateral actions of the Israeli government is at alarming rate. And the situation politically as if there is no future, you know. The peace process is not moving. Any kind of peace process needs a kind of jump start now. And the situation is terrible on that level, in the sense you can see the impact of the occupation on every family. You can see that if we talk about statistics, 1/4 to 1/3 of the male population have been in jails since 1967. And 12,000 women have been in jail since 1967. So you can tell that every family suffered from the occupation in terms of jail. But also, nowadays we see how the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem, the land occupied in 1967, got smaller and smaller. You know? And the whole West Bank towns becomes like small cantons, Palestinians, isolated from each other by either the wall, which is 5 times Berlin Wall, in terms of length, and 2 times the Berlin Wall in terms of height. And this wall is not built on the, you know, seam line. It is 80% of it is on the Palestinian land, gobbling more land, creating different scenarios there. And we talk about the settlements that you heard about the settlements a lot, and freezing the settlements, not freezing the settlements. A deal with arms from the United States and support of, and settlements are not frozen except when it snows. And, you know, there are 500 Israeli Jewish settlements, settlers in the West Bank. You know, talking about a process to create a different reality on the ground. And when we talk about settlements, we're not talking about illegal buildings, we talk about, you know, the control of the land, the resources. You know, when you talk about the water, you know, here I'm gracious to the Haines that I sometimes take 2 times a bath. There, you know, 84% of the water is taken by the Israeli side. And many times we pay 4 times the Israeli pay for it. And not always the water is running 24 hours. It comes once every 3 weeks or 4 weeks. So this is really a situation that, you know, tells you about features of the occupation. And when I talk about that, I'm not talking about to be anti-Israeli or asking you to be anti-Israeli. I'm talking about anti-occupation. Because as a Palestinians, we have taken the strategy for two-state solution to live and let others live, you know. But since Oslo, it seems things are not moving forward, and we thought that the Oslo peace process was a quantum leap that should lead to a qualitative leap toward justice and peace and reconciliation. But it didn't go in that line, didn't go in that path. Unilateral actions are more increased in this area. More kids are put in prison. And there are different checkpoints in the West Bank. And I have no problem to guarantee the security for Israel, but also I believe in inclusive security. Palestinians should enjoy security, and Israelis should enjoy it. There is no security for Israel if the Palestinians are lack of security, and vice versa. And I believe good neighbors make good fences, and not vice versa. The apartheid wall is not creating security. It is a mechanism for gobbling more land. And this is a way to look at it more. And we shouldn't be shy if we call a spade a spade. And we shouldn't be afraid, if we are Jewish and have justice point of view, to be called self-hating Jew, or if we are not Jewish, to be called anti-Semitic. I believe you are anti-Semitic when you are anti-justice. And it is the time to say the things as they are, and to, you know, the truth, and the truth will liberate you in a way or another. So I can go on the ugly face of what's going on, the occupation, what's going on, and many people will say, this is a hopeless case. What are the issues that bring hope? And before going into the issue of hope, what will be possible responses or possible ways to deal with this issue? And nowadays the Palestinian leadership talks about continuing the dialogue, continuing the peace talks. And whenever we are fed up, we tell the president or the prime minister, we are fed up with the situation. Look what is going on, you know. Our life is not really promising. And he would always say, the response, we need to invest in talks and peace. And I like this strategy of, you know, investing in peace talks that hopefully lead to something. But in the meantime, what will be the responses of the Palestinians if the peace talks will not go? And sometimes such responses will be prepared or, you know, ready after thoughts, after ideas, after strategy. And sometimes it cannot predict it. What are the possible responses? One of them is to dismantle the Palestinian Authority. That President Abbas to resign. And what does it mean? What would happen? And it is easy, some voices to call for resignation of President Abbas. And sometimes President Abbas threatened to resign because, wait a minute, I cannot deliver the good news for the people. I cannot talk about being two-state solution, and we see the West Bank is divided into many cantons. There is no viable Palestinian state. East Jerusalem is separated from the West Bank. Gaza is away. Gaza itself is a bigger prison, you know. And so he felt that there is no future in the peace talks. Although, not yet going into that line. Another response we heard from the younger generation, talking about third uprising, you know, another intifada. Although we know that the Palestinians, you know, hit the ground. And the situation is very exhausting. But knowing the fact that most of our population are a young population, you could say 60% of our population are younger than 30, they will take things, especially when we talk about 18, 19, 20 years old, they say, wait a minute, the older generation have sold it. We will try ourselves the new struggle. And it is easy to start a new struggle, but you are not sure where it will lead you. So is third uprising a solution to end occupation or not? No one will tell. And where will it lead us? Third one is what the Palestinians more are thinking of, to declare the state. to declare a state and to be recognized by the international community. And there are many voices in Latin America talking about recognizing the state. Europeans are doing more around that. The Americans, on the official level, denied it and wouldn't go in that line, and even send a message to refuse it. But of course, the American people and American groups and peace activists having a different situation. But declaring the state is a very important way also to have a type of nonviolence on the government level. You know, instead of declaring emergency or declaring struggle, you know, they talk about declaring the state. And this is a test to the world in general and the peace movement in the world to assume their collective responsibility. So the Palestinians have been patient enough since 1948, and they have been abiding with the peace processes, the leadership and the people, and even Hamas is always talk about truce with the Israeli side, and they don't see anything in return. So declaring the state is a kind of escalation in a nonviolent way. And this is very important if the declaration of the state will happen, because there will be now more calls for BDS, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And there are lots of argument about this issue. Many people in circles in the United States and Europe say this is anti-Semitic action, or this is another way to destroy Israel. This is some of people talking about that. But when we talk about this as a Palestinian who live in the occupied territories, we are challenging the occupation, and I say, yes, we should divest from any company to prolong the occupation. Boycott all the goods that are produced by the Israeli settlement and have sanctions to get that Israel will come to its senses. I'm not interested in Israel to go to its knees, because we are talking about restorative justice. We like to live. We celebrate life, and we opt for life, and we like to do it. So when we talk about restorative justice, we talk about redressing the wrongs rather than avenging it. And this is very important factor that the world should know as a Palestinian when we talk about two-state solution, that we recognize Israel, but whether Israel recognized us, what borders, and so on, this is another challenge. And again, this is also addressed to the world community that, wait a minute, we need to move from blame, we need to move from victimhood, from guilt, from pointing the finger, to collective responsibility. Because I believe dwelling on victimhood is very suicidal, and blaming is very toxic. We need to assume responsibility altogether. And this will not happen unless the Palestinians continue their struggle nonviolently to get rid of the occupation. Occupation is evil. And the pro-justice camp in Israel, which is a ray of hope, although they are small in number, but there's a ray of hope to continue their preventive approach of nonviolence to help Israel to get rid of the occupied territories. Because occupation is a burden. And the third party is the third party has very important role, whether at the UN level or as government or people's movement, to help both realize that there is a way out. As a person who has been active in the peace movement for a long time, I used to work on the grassroots level, and I believe in the grassroots. But up till this moment, we haven't seen a change in the Israeli government policy. So we need a pressure on Israel, and it's needed to have multi-track diplomacy, and one of them, the states, to have a pressure on Israel. And since we are talking about the United States, we are talking about the impact that could change, you know, because you are in great power, and great power always associated with a great responsibility. And this is very important, because the United States has been spoiling Israel for a long time with all of the taxes, with the arms, with all of that, and I hope that Israel will not endanger United States' interest by following such a policy. So it is the time now, United States, to exert some pressure to create a different synergy there and to move into the peace talks. Another option, and I wouldn't like that option, is we see a rise of fundamentalism all over. We see it in the Jewish circles, we see it in the Christian circles, we see it in Islamic circles. Myself, I don't believe that I need to gain a seat in heaven or conquer the other enemy. I like to live life before death, as I might believe in life after death, you know. But at the same time, if the situation will not move forward, I see fundamentalism will be there more and more. And the next war will be war of fundamentalism. And it's not healthy for Islam, for Christianity, for Judaism. And we see that more right-wing groups are mushrooming in Israel to call for a Jewish state, whether through the oath of loyalty, you know, as well as different rabbis have different declarations. And this, of course, will feed the Islamic fundamentalism. I'm not talking about certain groups, but I'm talking more to the right of Hamas and more to the, groups in the Arab world and the Muslim world who haven't been able to see good Israeli or good Jew. I'm talking about, like Al-Qaeda or so on. And of course, we have the Christian fundamentalism in this country who would like to speak the second coming of the Messiah by continuing, the support unconditional for Israel and having to exaggerate Islamic phobia. And I will say, if you want to speak the second coming of the Messiah, do it, but not on my expense, on my people's expense. So we need to be really raising a red flag about this kind of, and we see that nowadays in the Middle East, there are more groups talking about this type of religious state here, religious state there, and we go back to how many centuries, in the past, and we know when every group will think that God is created in their image, rather than we are created in the image of God, we understand that God becomes a tribal God or real estate agent God or cheerleader for war. We need to work with religious leaders, religious groups, to again transform the use of religion from being a source of conflict to a resource for peace and coexistence and reconciliation. Having said that, we are not sure where are we heading. Are we heading to community building or chaos? And with all of that, we see that as if we are closed and very close to chaos. It's not so gloomy at all. There are still hopes, and there are many reasons for hope. And I'd like to address that before I open the floor for questions because, many people say we are tired to hear about the negative things. Are there any positive things? And, sometimes you wonder what to say. But at the same time, hope is the thing that keeps us going. And hope is a form of nonviolent struggle for us that, gives us the power and the strength to continue in this less traveled road. Because what's going on there needs another way to relate to. And I start with hope, having people like you to come to this meeting today to hear about this issue from different walks of life, from different political, social, religious backgrounds, is a sign that people are concerned about the situation. And with the delegations that today, with the Peace Corps, with the Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility, different groups coming to the Middle East, show that people are concerned and sometimes they take risk You know, and I know how many of you received calls or emails to say, don't go there. You know, it's very dangerous. And people have been killing each other there for a long time. You are not going to fix it by a few days. I know that, but I commend your courage to come and visit. And since we talk about Christmas, we say there is room in the inn. Come and visit and stay with the Palestinians. Come to listen to Israelis and Palestinians. We need your voice. We need your prophetic voice. We need your prophetic action. That's very important to see more of you coming to that area, because it gives hope, and also you are giving another way of dialogue of cultures and religions that are needed nowadays than any time. And it is a response to those who believe in the war of fundamentalism or clashes of civilizations. So it is very important. And also another source of hope, as I mentioned, the Israeli peace camp, and I hope that the peace camp in Israel will be more a movement as it was in 1982 and after that. So to have a peace movement that will influence the Israeli government, Israeli foreign policy, to come to terms to end occupation. Because occupation doesn't demoralize me as a Palestinian, but also demoralizes the Jews as a burden to the Israelis and the Jewish community in the world. And many times I listen to many Israeli activists, like Jeff Helber and others, or lately I was reading something about Shifting Sands, a booklet of for 14 women Israelis who are couldn't stand and be silent about the situation. And I would like to read a quotation for Star Hawk, which says, those who love Israel need to stand with her true interest now by demanding an end to the occupation, an end to the siege of Gaza, the dismantling of the settlements, restitution and real justice. These are the preconditions that will lead to security and peace. Look at this voice, you know, to call things by their names. And ending the occupation will save the soul of Israel in a way or another. So we need the peace movement in Israel to be more on the ground and to be active and to create a change in the policy, not for the sake of Palestinians, but for the sake of Israelis. The third type of hope is as a humble student of history, who says the apartheid regime in South Africa will be dismantled. That doesn't mean there is justice, high level of justice, 100%, but there has been a change. Who says Berlin Wall will be falling? Berlin Wall fell down. And it's shame on us to see that another wall is built recently in the land that should really disseminate the peace message to the world. But definitely, the wall will fall one time. And of course, we talk about Northern Ireland, that the Republicans and the loyalists are sharing the government. So there are signs of change in the world. Why the leaders there in Israel are procrastinating and delaying the inevitable. The inevitable that we are going to live together no matter whether one state solution or two state solution. That the Palestinians and Israelis are destined to live together. So we should speed up this inevitability and stop the procrastination, whether through peace talks, whether through influencing the peace accords and so on. And I believe at the end, there are many signs of hope that's happening within the Palestinian society, that we are, yes, we are in big prisons and small prisons. We are more organizing ourselves. We are investing more in education and building the infrastructure, doing better job at home, not yet 100% satisfactory, but people are happy to have better conditions to celebrate life again. They value life. despite the fact that anytime Israeli helicopters or tanks could destroy all of that. But there is a determination from our people to build institutions, to create a democracy, to separate the powers, and to move forward. There is improvement of human security there in the last 2 years, better than previously. And this is a sign of hope. And we like to have strong opposition, very civilized opposition. We need to create more the unity among ourselves, the diversity, to celebrate the differences among ourselves, because this way that will lead to peace, justice, coexistence, and reconciliation. I'm not naive to say hope, this kind of hope will tomorrow end the occupation. I'm at the same time, I wouldn't like to surrender to pessimism. Neither I am optimistic. I am cautiously hopeful. And hope could be concrete if it is coupled with action as well as collective responsibility. And we are all called to assume our collective responsibility. Thank you very much.